Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Gila. I'm Gila Glassberg, your host, and today I interviewed Adina Meister. Adina is, as you'll hear on the episode, she is a nurse, and recently she became an intuitive eating counselor, which is super exciting that there are more people out there still learning about intuitive eating, taking the course, and helping other people learn and implement the principles of intuitive eating, which, as you know, is like a really big part of my life. It's a big passion of mine, and I'm so excited that she was able to come on and share her story of her own diet culture history, her own shame around food and body image. And something that really stood out to me in the interview is like that feeling of isolation when you're embarrassed about the way you eat or embarrassed about your weight, and how isolating it is and how it keeps you from really enjoying your life and going out and sharing with people. And just even re-listening to the episode and hearing that, it was like I had a visceral reaction to the loneliness of feeling so lonely when you feel so badly about yourself. And that doesn't even have to be about the way that you look or the way that you eat. It could just be in general something that we could all relate to as humans, of like that feeling of isolation when you're not feeling good about yourself and not wanting to show up in the world because you don't feel like your best self. So I really appreciate Adina coming on and sharing her story. I learned a lot from the episode, and I know that you will too. And if you have learned anything from this podcast or gained anything, please share this podcast with other people who can benefit from this information. Please rate the podcast, review the podcast. That really, really helps the podcast move up in the Apple ranking. And that way people who are looking for intuitive eating or looking for healing their relationship with food can find this podcast. And it would really mean a lot to me. And if you are looking to heal your relationship with food, go to my website, www.gilaglassberg.com. You can sign up for a free 20-minute consultation there. And while you're there, you could also watch a lot more podcast episodes on YouTube or listen to them or read many of my blogs. And now I started posting recipes. So yay, I'm really excited about that. I actually really love making up my own recipes. So check that out. And without further ado, here's the episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Get Into It with Gila. I know you're going to love the content here because you will gain inspiration, powerful tools and insights, and valuable knowledge. If you want more of this, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com or visit me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. I'm Gila Glassberg, a registered dietitian and intuitive eating counselor. I have come to realize by counseling many, many women that this work is much deeper and greater than food and body image. It's the bigger picture challenges we face of love, belonging, acceptance, what our true values and goals are, noticing them, addressing them, and gaining skills to move forward. If you have been struggling with what your life's purpose is, or you just feel stuck in general and don't know what's holding you back, this podcast will enlighten and inspire you to take action and move forward. This podcast is about other women in the 21st century who feel that losing weight will fix all their problems or somehow meet their unmet needs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Gila. I'm Gila Glassberg, your host, and today I have on Adina Meister. Hi, Adina.
Hi. So wonderful to be here.
I'm so glad that you're here. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Where do you live and what do you do?
Thank you. Yeah. So I live in Baltimore, Maryland, and I have worked as a psychiatric nurse for a little more than 10 years.
Wow.
And at this time, I am I recently became a certified intuitive eating coach, and I am trying to kind of start my practice at this time. Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Okay. So, wow. So you're a nurse and now you're shifting to totally private practice.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm assuming that there's a personal story there. So, were you always into intuitive eating? Did you grow up with it? Did you stumble upon it? How did it walk us through the whole story?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. I'm going to try to like shorten it as much as I can. So I was always interested in mental health, probably because I struggled with my own mental health for many, many years. Specifically, now that I look back, it was really all kind of tainted with this eating disorder / disordered eating / diet roller coaster that really had such a negative effect on really every aspect of my life. As Christy Harrison, I know you mentioned Christy Harrison, I'm a big fan of Christy Harrison too. And she talks about the life thief. And anyway, so that definitely played a part in everything. But so when I became a nurse, I knew I really wanted to go right into mental health nursing, and that's what I did. And in terms of how I heard about intuitive eating, so throughout my life, I guess beginning at age 14, I began dieting. And even before that, I think food was kind of, there was a lot of like food policing growing up, and just there's a lot of body shame and feeling like my body was not the right size. And so when I was 14, I kind of took on the first diet. And really from that point, it was either I was on the diet and I was being good and I was losing weight and I was feeling wonderful and I was getting all the compliments and I was feeling in control of my life and everything was wonderful, or I was off the diet and I was feeling so much shame and I felt so terrible. And then I started to gain the weight back and feeling like I couldn't be around people and I had to isolate myself. And really that cycle really just continued for so many years. And at some point, it was really when I was working with my last job as a nurse, I was working with older adults in a outpatient psychiatry center. And I remember like working with them, and really we would work on different positive coping strategies. And I remember thinking, like, I don't want to be an older person, and still having to feel like I have to control my food, count my calories, feel like my whole world is like centered around this issue. Like, it's, I don't want to live my whole life like this.
Totally.
So I, and at the time also, I just continued to struggle with my food. I continued to struggle like that classic like yo-yo dieting. And eventually, I remember at the time, I just kept like trying to research like normal eating, how to eat like a normal person, because I didn't want to be on or off. I want to just be normal. I want to just have a normal relationship with food. And
Totally.
that's when I stumbled across Christy Harrison, and then I came in, and I came across Intuitive Eating. I bought the book Intuitive Eating, and I have been hooked ever since. I read that book and I was like, oh my gosh, like this makes so much sense. And then I ended up getting professional help to really move away from all the dieting behaviors and into intuitive eating. And because I feel like I have been given such a gift, I have been given this like peaceful relationship to food and my body. And especially now that I'm on the other side, and I really see how much of a thief diet culture was on my life. And I just, my life went from being like kind of small to so big. My brain space went from being like taken over by like food and body thoughts to like, it's very, really a very small piece of my brain. Thank God. I just feel like I've been given such a gift. Like I have to pay it forward. It's like my responsibility. I have to pay it forward. I want to share it with my community. I want to share it with anyone else that's struggling. And also to do as much preventative work as I can, because so much of my struggles I felt like didn't need to be. It didn't need to be that way.
Oh, beautiful story. So I'm gonna go back to the beginning if that's okay. So you said your
Yeah.
first diet started at age 14, and you said before that you grew up, I guess, you like not specifically, but there was a lot of diet culture voices in your head. There was a lot of body shaming. There was a lot of like this is good, this is bad food, right? So why did you start dieting at age 14, and how did you even know about dieting specifically?
Yeah. So I think like I'll kind of share this very short story that kind of shares just how much it affected me. I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I remember arguing with my mother that I knew that I was pregnant, because if I was pregnant and my stomach was like a little larger than, let's say, like my siblings or my peers, then it would make everything okay. Like I knew being pregnant was socially acceptable, but having like a belly like I had was socially not acceptable. And I remember like arguing with her back and forth that like I knew I was pregnant. She was like, no, I know you're not pregnant. And
I
really,
know,
and it
that's
was like, I always
funny.
like thought that was like a funny story, but
Yeah.
now looking back, I think it's like I want to go back and hug that little girl because
Yeah.
obviously she felt like her body was not okay. Like I just got the
Unaccepted.
messaging, it was not
Yeah.
acceptable. And I'm not saying necessarily specifically from my family, but just the whole culture and just knowing like my body was not okay. So I just for so long as a child, like I just knew it wasn't okay. And there was a lot. There was dieting. One of my parents was a very big dieter and still is a very big dieter. So dieting was definitely very prevalent. And there was just like a lot of diet culture messaging in my home growing up.
So you knew about dieting from a very young age. You knew like eat this, don't eat this. This is good, this is bad. So age 14, what about age 14 made you like, okay, I'm gonna do this?
That's a great question. No one has ever asked me that before. Why?
Well,
Like, why?
that's why I'm the
Yes.
interviewer, right?
Why at age 14? I imagine it had something to do with, like going through puberty, my body was changing. I imagine it had something to do with feeling like I wasn't in control. There probably was some anxiety at that time also, and just feeling like maybe this is something I could control and gain like acceptance with, if I would be in a more acceptable body size, like that I would just be more acceptable to society, and this would like just be a good thing for me.
Yeah. It's a really important point for teenagers and even people older than teenagers, even younger than teenagers, for everyone, but I'm saying specifically teenagers. It's such an interesting thing that dieting becomes like a tool for acceptance. Like, and the same way that, like, especially age 14, your body's changing and just like everything's changing, you want like that life raft of like, I could be in this group. I could, so some people it's like really important to get good grades, and some people they focus on their sports or whatever. But because there's this culture that you are only beautiful if you're skinny, and of course, everybody's pursuing beauty, right? Even like it's so confusing to me how that's become so culturally normal in our Orthodox community. But so it's like, okay, well, so then we've kind of like, have you heard that term? Like we scapegoat our body. Like we sort of like everything is about my weight. So like if I want to be accepted, if I want to be loved, if I want to do well in school, all I have to do is control my weight. And then obviously that piggybacks off of the whole theory of eating disorders that like when everything feels out of control, at least I could control my food. So those two things kind of like were playing out at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. It was like as soon as you had a taste of it, and as soon as I like saw how wonderful I felt with, I guess, the one aspect of like feeling in control of my life and also the feedback that I got, it was almost like addictive.
It's a drug,
Like
yeah.
that, it's a drug. It was like, this is something I definitely need to keep doing. Yeah.
It's not actually a drug, but
Yeah.
they
It's
it that
very quick.
feeling, it feels like very much similar to like an addiction.
Absolutely.
So age 14, so you went on your first diet, you lost weight, you felt amazing, everybody was complimenting you, right? And then do you remember like the dieting backlash? Do you remember like, oh my gosh, I'm out of control?
Unfortunately, I don't remember like this first time that like I felt out of control, but I definitely remember feeling like out of control with food. And that wasn't how I used to feel when I was younger. I don't remember like to the extent anyway. I don't remember feeling like out of control with food, feeling like I used to joke, like, whatever's not nailed down to the kitchen, like, I'm gonna just eat everything. And that was really how I would feel. I would just feel, which makes sense now that I know what happens, but I really felt like I just needed to keep eating everything in sight. That was my body trying to protect me so I wouldn't like starve to death. But it was when I would start having those behaviors, of course, like the shame set in, and I just felt so terrible about myself. And then it's just that cycle. It was just that cycle, and it just kind of just continued on and on and on. I couldn't break out of that cycle. I was like in jail. I was like imprisoned in this diet cycle, this vicious cycle.
It's also because it's praised by society. So like if you were doing drugs, God forbid, and you were on and off drugs, people would be like, you gotta get off the drugs. But since you're doing weight loss, it's like, come on, keep going, you got this, you've done it before, right? And it's just like, it's just so it perpetuates the problem.
Exactly.
Now that you're looking back on it, did weight loss ever actually give you what you wanted?
Never.
Never. Right. It's so
Never.
interesting. So, You said that you became a nurse because you struggled with your own mental health issues, and you specifically psychiatric. Why nursing? Did you ever want to do nutrition? Like, was there ever anything like that?
You know, it's interesting. There was a part of me that did want to go into nutrition, but I think I had enough self-awareness that I knew if I go into nutrition, people will look at me for guidance on how to lose weight. And that will be so much pressure that I will always need to be in a small size. And what if I gain weight? And I just kind of knew like that was going to be way too anxiety provoking and way too stressful. Like that wasn't a good decision for me. Because I knew at that time already there was like so much up and down that I was like, why would I go into a field that like it's just going to cause so much stress and anxiety for me.
It's so sad that we think that as nutrition students, you know, and I've heard actually Christy Harrison says this, that there's I think that there's research that shows that 80% of dietitians go into dietetics because they want to lose
Make sure
weight. They
they're
want to learn the
healthy.
best way, not even, yeah, to be skinny, basically. So it's interesting because it's like, even as a nutrition student, like, it's not like the only thing we learned about was weight loss, you know, like there's so much more to nutrition. It's like so sad that it's been minimized to like nutrition is weight loss. Like that's, it's sad, honestly.
Absolutely.
So when you started working as a psychiatric nurse, did you feel like you were doing what you were meant to be doing? Because you were also, I'm sure, helping so many people.
Yeah, definitely. In a lot of ways, I really felt like I had found my calling. I just loved helping people just feel better emotionally, mentally, especially like I mentioned the last I had worked a number of like inpatient positions. And then I worked outpatient. That really was like so incredibly rewarding. And it was really interesting because as I was working in this position, I kind of my job was actually really similar to like a typical social worker's job in that position. And I actually my coworkers were social workers, and we really had the same job. But they so but as a nurse, I really was like teaching positive coping strategies and really in planning for the groups that I was running with my patients, I learned so much about just mental, like just positive mental health in general. That's actually where I learned about positive psychology, which I just think is such an amazing field. I love positive psychology. And as I was teaching these ideas to my patients, I really was trying my best to incorporate what I was learning to my own life and trying to have the best positive mental health that I could. And I see kind of on my journey as I learned more, my mental health really got better and better and better, but like to a point, because I believe like if someone is struggling with food and body, their mental health can only become so good. You know, if you're still going to be struggling with food and body stuff, like it's going to be really difficult to just have the mental health that you really want.
I don't know if you want to explain that like biologically, but it is really interesting.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like if let's say for example, so let's say I was working on, you know, on my own, I was working on, okay, I'll just break it down. Like if I'm not eating enough during the day, for example, and I'm on a diet and I'm restricting, and then I'm finding myself occasionally eating out of control or binging, and I'm trying to implement positive coping strategies in my life so that I don't do those, I don't have those negative behaviors. So I can have all the most, I mean, I literally would have, I had a coping a strategy sheet for myself. It was, I posted it in my kitchen on like the back of one of the cabinets. I literally would have it in front of me. I had all these amazing coping skills, positive coping skills, wonderful ones. But if I'm not feeding myself enough, or I'm restricting, I'm emotionally restricting, it doesn't matter how amazing those coping strategies are, I am still going to engage in those negative behaviors because my body is starving, and it's trying to save me. So I think that's one way that I'm thinking of that.
That's a great example. I like to explain it to clients like you know, we know that like eating disorders are really not a physical disorder. They're really a mental illness, but they manifest physically because if you're not eating enough or you're binging, that will affect your physical health, right? So specifically with anorexia, when you don't ha when your brain does not have enough calories, your brain is not getting enough glucose because you're not eating enough, your brain will not function optimally. Like I actually always recommend the book Sick Enough, which is like a really, really good breakdown of eating disorders medically. And you're like it talks about like hallucinating because your brain is not, it doesn't, it's not functioning optimally. It's completely haywire from the lack of calories. So that's such a good point. Like I've said this to my own therapist before, that like sometimes you have the skills, but you can't access them. So the way, one of the things that gets in the way of, I guess, accessing our tools is like either not eating enough or excessively thinking about food and body image. Like you said before, your life was very small. So I find like what a lot of people like argue with me about these things, and I say like, okay, fine, 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 fine. You can lose weight. Go on a diet, lose weight. I'm sure you could keep it off. How much of your life will be spent on keeping it off? Is that worth it? That's really like my ultimate argument is like, sure, go ahead. Eat X amount of calories a day and don't, and go to the gym 4 hours a day and make sure that your meals are prepared every single night before you go to bed. Great. What else are you doing in your life? Like, it's just so sad.
Exactly. It's the quality of life. Like, who wants to
Right.
live like that?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I know, you know, like what the research shows anyway, is like, we think that we can keep it off, but the research shows that after 5 years, what is it? 95 to 98% of people
Yeah.
cannot keep it off. Like, the
Right.
body just is not
The
meant.
body doesn't want that.
Yeah.
Right. People really don't want to accept that truth. They
I
really don't want to
understand.
accept that truth.
I know, they really, and I totally get it, because that was me. Like, it was like the definition of insanity. I would just like, over and over again, doing the same behaviors, expecting different results.
Yeah,
I just
totally.
felt like I'm special. I can do this. I can lose the weight
Right.
and keep it off.
Right.
Not
Right.
special.
Right.
Not in that way.
Yeah, you are special. But it's not, it's yeah, I guess that's a good, like just the research. Just look at, I always say like look around. People are like, yeah, she kept it up. I'm like, how long has she kept it up? For 2 months? But I understand people do keep it off. I'm not saying nobody keeps it off. Some people do. There are so many factors, but
Absolutely.
and usually dieting makes you gain weight ultimately.
Yeah, oh,
That's
100%.
the irony of it all.
Exactly. That is the irony, right? The irony,
Yeah.
when I look back and I think, like, if I had never started dieting, the likelihood statistically, like, I probably would be in a smaller body than I am today,
Right,
which is
right.
so ironic. Yeah.
Right. It's true. I've heard people say that they started dieting, you know, at a very young age, maybe even before 14, and they lost weight, they gained it back plus more. They lost weight, they gained it back plus more. And that's really like the set point weight theory, right? That we have a set point weight range, and every single time we diet, we slow down our metabolism as a survival mechanism, right? And then we end up binging, and then we gain back even more weight, and then we do it again. And like weight cycling is worse for our health than quote unquote being overweight. So it's like, I know that like so many people don't believe this, but it's just like, to me, it's like so obvious, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Same. And
right.
actually, you know, if I may actually share a little bit more, just to kind of, especially coming from the mental health perspective, to kind of share, I'm thinking of more ways, just practically, how dieting really hijacked my mental health. So it wasn't just like, you know, the fact that I wasn't able to implement positive coping strategies. It also, like, it just took over my joy. It took over all of my headspace. So much of the time, I really was feeling so shameful because my body was trying to do what it needed to do and get me to eat more. So either I was like kind of like white knuckling it and like doing everything I could to try and not overeat, which some examples looked like making myself go to sleep early, which I have nothing against. I actually go to sleep early nowadays because it's good for my mental health, but like, but not in a good way.
Right.
Like,
So you
making
don't eat
myself
at night.
so I don't need to stay in my bed. I would try to
I've
like
heard
not
that.
get up early because I wanted to like delay eating for as long as possible.
Trigger warning, just in case this is like some sort of like clues for people. I know it's really
Yes, a
not,
hundred
it's
percent, a
very not
hundred percent.
healthy.
Yes,
Yes.
yes. Or even like affecting my mental health by all the isolation that I experienced and I brought onto myself. For example, anytime that I felt like I was overeating or like my weight was kind of going upwards, I would not allow myself to like partake in any kind of social event. So even if I had things scheduled, I would make excuses. I would not go to simchas. I would not go to parties. I would not let myself go to shul. I wouldn't even go into like the supermarket. I wouldn't like, I would try to go like like when no one else was there, I couldn't be seen. I mean, all of that has, and we know like the in terms of longevity,
Yeah.
the connection with like living alone,
Connection. Yeah.
was doing the opposite. I was isolating myself from everyone, even my closest relationships. I couldn't be honest because it was so shameful. And even like I have like another like little example, which was just, I remember my son at the time was probably like 2 or 3, and we had gone to the supermarket and he really wanted to go in one of those like fun carts, which I don't really see nowadays. Maybe they're not safe or something, but the ones that have
Okay.
like a car in the front, one of those, because it's so fun. But I remember specifically one time where I was feeling like I couldn't be seen and I was just so shameful, and I just, society just couldn't even look at me. And I remember saying, I couldn't let him take that cart because I knew it would bring more attention to me. I also was like a little bit noisy and I didn't want to draw any extra attention to myself. So I remember saying to him, like, no, we're just gonna take the regular cart. And that, like, to me, that's the opposite of positive mental health. Positive mental health is like engaging in your life, being present with your children and your family, and like doing the things that bring you joy. And that's the opposite of that, you know?
Totally. It's like I'm having a visceral reaction to that because it's like, it sounds so extreme that dieting steals your life. I know people say that, but like, it really does. Like, if you can't go to a supermarket and you don't want to go to a swim club because of the way that you look, there's so many layers to why that's an issue, you know? But it's really sad. It's like really, really hard to even hear. And I know Brené Brown says this, I've heard her say this, that like research shows that, that like the more when people live alone, like that is very much connected to dying earlier, which is like, and I think she says that loneliness is the number one killer. And I know like everyone in every profession like has an opinion about what's the number one killer, but like when she said that, I was like, wow, like if only people would know, like everything is interconnected, but like let's say like people have stomach aches and they go to a dietitian or a doctor, but like really they need a psychologist because they're having stomach aches because of you know, trapped emotions or
Anxiety,
whatever,
or right.
and they're all related. Like, yeah, of course, like if you don't take care of yourself in other ways, that could also lead to like premature death. But like also like one of the things that we can control in some ways is like making sure we have community. And that is like so good for our physical and mental health. It's, as opposed to like whenever people bring up health, it's about what you're eating. And it's so minimizing.
Absolutely, absolutely right. Health. I love like the visual of like people think of health, if you look, you imagine a circle, people think of health as like 50% the food that you eat and 50% exercise, when really like those are both like a very small piece of the puzzle of what
Right.
overall health and well-being actually is, you
Totally.
know?
Yes, I do that visual a lot with clients.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like just draw a circle and realize how much of your headspace is taken over by food and body image. And like, do you really want that? You know, like you could continue dieting, go for it. 'Cause then say, hey, I don't care really. I mean, I care about them, but I'm saying it's none of my business if they don't want me to help them. But like, it's just like, just re recognize what you're giving up. You know, every choice that you make, you say yes to this, you say no to that. And that's just the way it is.
Exactly.
Okay, so you were 14 when you started dieting. So when was that shift? At what age?
My goodness. Okay. So it was about, like, losing track of time. I remember it was about the year, well, I'm 37 now, and it was about 2017 that things shifted. So I guess about 5, 6 years ago, when things started shifting.
Okay.
And really that was when I just realized like I just could not, like, it was something that was on my mind. I was trying to research how to eat like a normal person. I didn't want to continue having to live this life anymore. It was just, and also I knew it was not unhealthy. I like tried as best as I could to hide it from my kids because like I knew it wasn't healthy. And I just I so I knew I wanted to move away from it, but I just didn't know how. So I was kind of like on the back of my, like on the forefront of my mind, actually. I was trying to figure out a way that I could move away from it. And then around the same time, there was a number of like different life transitions happening for me at the time, and I found myself like dieting harder and like being more strict. And that was actually always a correlation. I noticed that like the more flexible I was with my dieting, then the binging decreased, versus the more strict I was with my dieting, the worse off the binges were.
Right.
Which, you know, that makes
Makes
sense. But
sense. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought for a
No.
second.
You were saying that when, like, during the life transitions, that's when you dieted harder.
Exactly. So I found myself, thank you, found myself dieting harder. And then it was like I would diet so much harder, and then the binges like just got worse and worse, to a point where it was like it felt like almost every day I was binging. I was going into the day like, this is going to be the day where you are good with your food and you stay within your calorie limits and you make sure you exercise. And then it was like almost every evening I was like ending the day like feeling out of control with my food. And
Totally.
so I was like, okay, this has to stop. This has to stop. And I think it was like around that time, like I said, that I found Christy Harrison, I found intuitive eating, and then I signed myself up for professional treatment to help me. Like I knew I couldn't do it by myself. It was like too, it was like so much, it was like such a huge part of my life. Like I knew I needed help. So I got myself professional help. I worked with a registered dietitian, and psychologist, both well versed with intuitive eating and health at every size.
Amazing.
And they, along with, you know, just like the online resources that I found from podcasts or from books, really like yanked me out of diet culture. And that's really how I was able to just say goodbye to it.
Wow, I love the terminology. Like you're stuck there, and you've got to
I'm
be yanked up.
stuck. I'm so stuck. Yeah.
So you were, I would say it was like almost 15 years that you were dieting, right? Maybe more. I'm not good at math.
No, that sounds about right. I couldn't
15,
figure out
16,
exactly, but
17.
yeah.
That's a lot of years. That's
It's a
really a
lot of
lot of
years.
years. So you eventually, what we call like hitting diet rock bottom, you're like, I just, this is taking up way too much of my life.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I was like, forgetting about the weight. That was also, of course, always a
I
big
was going to
piece.
just
It's like,
say that. Was that the hardest part? Letting go of the weight.
I have to say that giving up dieting and embracing intuitive eating really was like the most terrifying thing I've ever done, honestly. It was the most terrifying thing because it was like my whole life. It was like how I controlled my life. It was the way that I coped with everything. It was like, and I would even say this to myself sometimes, like, it doesn't even matter like what you accomplish during the day. It's the most important, obviously I want to accomplish things in my life outside of dieting, but the most important thing was that I was good on my diet. That was like the most important thing. So, I'm sorry,
Problem.
lost my train of thought again.
No problem.
But
I'm saying that I was saying I wanted to ask you about the fear of waking,
thank you.
and then you
Yes.
realize that,
Yeah. So therefore, exactly. So the fear, so the weight gain piece was, that was just totally
it's
terrifying.
terrifying. It's
It
totally
was totally
terrifying.
terrifying. And I'll even say, when I first started with the professional treatment, I started, I ended up gaining a little bit of weight, and I had to stop for a little bit because I
Yeah.
was like,
It's so
I
scary.
can't do this. This is
Yeah.
just too scary. This is
I
just too
know.
scary. And then thankfully I was able to just be like, okay, no, we're going back in. And then I've, yeah. But yeah, absolutely. The weight piece absolutely is terrifying.
I'm happy
Yeah.
that you share that with people, because I find I've heard this so many times, and you'll hear it as an intuitive eating counselor. People want to embrace intuitive eating so much, and they have this liberation, and then it's like, but Kila, I gained weight and I can't go up a size. And I'm like, I get it, but your body never wants it to be that way. But like, easy for me to say, you know? And it's just hard. It's hard for people. It's heart-wrenching and it's heartbreaking. Some people are like really gung-ho. They're like, it doesn't matter if I gain weight. This is like, I just can't. And other people have to take it, have to stop. They do. They have to stop and they go back, and you have to be honest with yourself. And it's really hard. It's like, not just the, like, for what's coming to mind for you specifically is that dieting was also like your hobby. It was a part of you. And that is very true for a lot of people. If I'm not dieting, then what? Then what? And like, not only the hobby part, it's like, I don't even know how to eat, because eating is dieting.
Exactly. Exactly, right? I had to learn how to eat. How does one eat like a normal person? And
Right.
exactly the hobby piece, like really that was it took up so much of my life. It was how I viewed the world. It was like, it was how I made just it was I used it to base how I made decisions, like meaning like even like little things like, am I eligible to like invite guests or go out for a Shabbos meal this week, pending how I was doing with my dieting? Like it was just having to like completely like revamp my thoughts,
Right.
my all of my like everything had to be all my wiring in my brain. It just all had to have like a complete makeover, really.
It sounds so crazy when you say it, by the way, but I hope people listen to it and could see themselves in the story because it's like, I know, like when I review my own dieting history and like the aha moment of intuitive eating, I remember gaining weight and I remember being horrified. Because I remember thinking, to be totally honest, I remember thinking, this is the answer and I'll lose weight. Like, I'm gonna do it perfectly and then I'm gonna lose weight. And then, like, I totally didn't. And I also had to go, like, I would question it sometimes to be like, wait a second, can this really be? Like, what if I keep gaining weight? Right? All the fears that come up for people. And, like, for me, it's been 5 or 6 years since I heard about intuitive eating. And I have to say, it's a real journey. It's a real, real journey. And it's like, I've said this on the podcast before. Like, if you've been dieting for 16 or 17 years and you worked with a dietitian for a month, sorry, like, that's not going to change your whole belief system. Like, it's really like, it's constant, like, noticing how entrenched we are in diet culture, how the world entrenched in diet culture. And yeah, I could throw out the intuitive eating book tomorrow and just go right back to dieting. And anyone could do that and I'd have no judgment about it. But you have to remember how terrible it was, how much it took over your life, and it's just not worth it.
100%. I could not agree more.
So you heard about intuitive eating from Christy Harrison, it sounds like.
I think so. I don't remember exactly, but it was like at around the same time. I think it was Christy Harrison. I remember Christy Harrison. I probably learned about the book through Christy Harrison, I imagine.
And you read it and you were like, yes.
It
Everything.
was
Okay.
like light bulbs. I was like, oh my goodness. And I'm someone, I love the library. I'm a big like book borrower from the library, but like I bought that book.
Yeah,
I
me too.
was
That's really funny.
like, yes.
Totally. I totally get it. So do you mind sharing the names of the dietitians and the psychologists I work with, or no, you don't have to, no pressure.
Thank you. You know what? So the people that I worked with, they worked for like a company that kind of dismantled. You know what? I think I'm gonna decline on sharing their names at the time, at this moment. And then if I
Change your
change my
mind. We'll
mind,
put it in the show
I'll put it
notes.
in the show notes. And of course, like in this moment, I'm like, can't remember. Like, I mean, I remember not be able to remember like one of their last names. And like, so I,
Totally fine. Totally fine. If you could, then share because it would be probably so helpful. But if you can't, totally fine.
absolutely.
And it's also impressive that you actually went all in. Like you're like, I'm gonna, and it's expensive. I don't know if you or use your insurance, but a lot of times when people tell me that, I'm like, wow, like you really invested in that. Just like, you invested so much in dieting. Like it's just, time. If you really want to see a difference, like you really have to invest. It doesn't have to be financially, but just like time and headspace and everything like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and I do feel really grateful. Like I was able to use my insurance, and I mean, I did have to pay, some out of pocket, but I do feel really grateful that it was through insurance. So that was
Yeah, that's
definitely
amazing.
helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. So could I ask you a question? Besides for the fear of weight gain, was there any other like major roadblocks when you were going through the intuitive eating process?
I think for me, the biggest roadblock was definitely the weight gain. I mean, that
Everything
was.
else was like, yes.
I think there was like, happens to be, I'm like a very like studious person. And like, once I commit to something, I'm like, I'm there. I'm like a very, like people call me, like I'm very responsible. I'm very like committed. And so, I got, worksheets in terms of like just my thoughts. Like you have this thought, you know what, I guess the roadblock was the black and white thinking. And so really breaking down each thought and recognizing that it was black and white. It was an all or nothing thought. Learning how to reframe the thought and having a more healthy thought. And also learning how to have self-compassion. And again, these were like strategies. It was like homework that I was doing, where I would like have the
Mm.
thought, reframing it, inserting self-compassion, all of these things. That it was difficult, but it was that was really, I think, how I moved on. Is really, I had to like I said, I had to rewire my brain. So it was hard, but it was doable, because I was willing to commit to it, and I really had the most wonderful professionals helping me. I'm so grateful to them. So, but I think but yeah, the hardest piece probably was the weight gain, which is interesting because kind of from where I am right now, and once I kind of like moved past the weight gain piece, it was also so liberating, because it was like, okay, the world tells me like I need to be a certain size, and I don't deserve to have a piece of cake or a cookie unless I'm very small. And it was like this feeling of like, well, the world is telling me this. I'm saying no. I'm saying I am taking care of my health and well-being, and I'm kind of like not really focusing on my weight and my body. Like, I'm just going to take care of myself. That's what's most important to me. This is my life, and I need to do the best that I can with my life. And I don't care about what the world thinks. And it was like such a liberating, like once I kind of was able to move through the process, it really has become so liberating, because it's like, I'm not a small body. I don't know, describing my whatever.
Okay.
I kind of
I get
recovered
it.
into a larger body than I used to be, but it's like it's also so liberating, because it's like to me, it's like I'm saying to the world, like, you tell me that I need to diet and be smaller, and I'm saying no. I'm
Right.
saying I'm not caring anymore what you have to say to me,
Right. It's, I guess, like I always say, intuitive eating is like at least intuitive living. It's like it really makes you have to face yourself and say, how much do I care what the world, like I've given 17 years of my life to dieting and look where it's got me, because I wanted to prove to the world that I could look like this or be like this. And it's such a hard thing to give up. It really is, but it shows that like you're not just working on your food related things. You're working on, accepting who you are, accepting who you are.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. I also wanted to say one more thing about what you were just saying. One second. Reminds me. Okay, you were saying that you didn't want to kind of keep doing what like everybody expected you to do. I don't
Right,
remember what I
right.
was going to say, but I wanted to talk about the liberation piece a lot. But
Yes.
anyways, I forgot.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'll just share a little bit more, because I don't want the listeners to think that it's still so hard and scary and
Yes,
difficult
yeah.
gaining weight. It is, like you said, it is such a journey being on the intuitive eating path. It's such a journey, and I don't feel like you never kind of quite arrive. It's you kind of
Yeah.
continue tweaking and
Right.
moving on, but I feel so much. I'm sorry, I hope you don't hear that's like a
Don't
sound in
hear
the back.
anything.
Everything okay? Amazing.
By the way,
Thanks.
this is such a mom conversation. We're both like lost our train of thought. I'm like, totally. I don't hear anything. Don't
I'm
worry.
so human. Yes.
Yeah. You're
So
so
yeah, there's
human.
like
I'm
the
so human.
dryer is like extra squeaky right now. I'm
Don't
sorry.
hear it. We don't hear it. Don't worry.
Okay. Anyways. So at this point, it used to be so scary. Now I really, my body image, I can't even tell you how amazing it is at this point in my life. I feel so much more confident than I have ever felt in my body, even when I was like in a smaller size body. You know what I mean? I just,
Yeah.
now again, it's a work in progress, and there are moments that, I have like poor body image thoughts, and I recognize them and I acknowledge them, and then I try to reframe them and do the things that and then kind of move on from it. But where I am today, it's not scary. I'm not scared being in the body that I am, because the things that I believe have changed. Like,
Right.
I really wanted to just make sure I mentioned just the health at every size paradigm, and the fact that bodies come in all shapes and sizes.
Right,
That was like
right.
a difficult thing for me to like really accept, especially as a registered nurse, someone who I all my training as a nurse was
Weight
very fat
centric.
phobic, weight
Yeah.
centric, and I really had to delve into the research. I'm a very evidence-based person. I really believe in research and looking at the latest studies, and I really had to delve into the research to really understand and then finally accept and really believe. I really do believe bodies come in all shapes and sizes. And when I, having that framework, having that philosophy really allows me to be in this world and to be happy and to live my fullest life. If I didn't have that philosophy, it would be much harder. If I believe that all bodies needed to be thin and all bodies needed to be a certain way, then yeah, then every day if I wake up and I don't think that I'm not in a thin body, then like that's going to be really hard to navigate the world in that body and having that thought process.
I totally agree with that. I think what I was going to say before I wrote it down is that when
Amazing.
you tell me what you think about this, but when you said that, like, the hardest part was the weight gain or fear of weight gain and everything else, kind of like it was hard, but you did it. And then you said, like, you learned on the with the black and white thinking and reframing and the self-compassion. I feel like that sums up what I do with my clients. And let me explain. Ultimately, most people who come to me really do agree with intuitive eating and they do struggle with the weight gain. Okay, that's one piece. But they're still like, a lot of times I'm just trying to help them realize, you've been dieting for, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. This is hard work. This is going to be really hard to change your belief system. And after, even like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 10 weeks, 20 weeks, whatever it is, they're like, but what do I do when I feel guilty? What do I do about the guilt? What do I do about the shame, right? And I'm not a therapist, but just learning that skill of self-compassion and reframing. And although it sounds like almost like silly, like it's just that's all it is, but it's like it's really again, it's really hard to access that tool when you're feeling so bad. But practicing that tool over and over and over again really does rewire your brain. So if you were listening to this podcast, 10 years ago before you heard about intuitive eating, you'd probably be watching it and be like, those psychopaths, like because it sounds so crazy the first time you hear it. But now you're like, yes. Your brain has literally been rewired. And I know for me, at least when I told people like, diversify your feed. Look at people who are skinny and fat on your Instagram that you think are beautiful. And you will eventually come to realize that, like, you don't look at a fat person and think, like, oh, that person's not pretty because she's fat. And it really happens. Like, we are conditioned to believe only skinny is pretty. And it's really just not true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know it's amazing for me to realize now, like when I can, when I look at, different people on the street, or I really, in the past, years ago, my dieting days and my, only thin is pretty. I really only believed thin was pretty. And if someone was in a larger body, well, someone was in a larger body, I didn't think that they were, could be beautiful. And now it's like, it's done like a 180, it's just, it's so, I really believe that beauty comes in all shapes and sizes. And also, the Health at Every Size movement really, I remember actually there was a specific study that the psychologist had printed out for me, which was really so important for me, to challenge my own beliefs, because it became clear that I had my own like fat phobia and my own like just discriminatory views against fat people. And I'm saying fat in a very neutral way. Basically, my viewpoint was if someone was in a larger body, that meant that they were binging every day and that they were eating out of control and that they weren't taking care of themselves and they weren't eating nutritious foods. And really this study kind of showed that actually there can be people who are in larger bodies and literally eat the same exact food as people in smaller bodies, and their bodies look different. And I was like, wow, that like blew my mind. I was like, oh my goodness, bodies really come in different shapes and sizes. And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what we put in our mouths. That was just, that was just so big
I
for
know.
me.
It's interesting because, like, we know people are different heights and we know people have different shoe sizes. And I know, yes, of course, there's some component of what you eat affecting your weight. Yes. I know. But, and how you move, but, like, really not so significant like we think. So, like, we are totally fine with knowing that people have different shoe sizes. And not only that, people have different body shapes. Like you could, two people could be the exact same weight and be, one could be like really tall and skinny and one could be shorter and fatter and they could be the exact same weight, you know? And, but we know that, but like this notion of like every, like bodies are much better at smaller sizes and it would be much better if you would do that. It's like such a ridiculous thing. It's like change your eye color, you know? It's like, it's really crazy.
It is absolutely, absolutely. And kind of circling back to what you said about the self-compassion piece, absolutely. I feel like self-compassion for me was like the precursor almost to intuitive eating. It's something that I really learned through the intuitive eating process. I mean, I knew about self-compassion before when I would teach my patients about it, but I didn't really get it. I really learned it and implemented it into my life through the intuitive eating process. And now, like you talked about intuitive living, I practice self-compassion to myself, like in all areas of my life now. And it's been such an amazing tool for me to just move forward with so many things. And I absolutely, I feel like self-compassion is such a important piece with intuitive eating. Because if we, it's like, for example, if someone is feeling like they're in the mood for a brownie, right? And then they have the brownie, they're trying to practice intuitive eating, they have the brownie. But then they have those black and white thoughts of like, oh my goodness, like maybe I shouldn't have had the brownie and this was bad. And does that mean I'm bad? And whatever, all of the kind of anxious
All the
thoughts someone
stuff.
has about diet culture. And then because they're not inserting that self-compassion, then what could happen? Well, either they just spiral into shame and they just feel really bad about themselves, which is also really bad for your overall health and well-being, all the cortisol release, whatever. But also, oftentimes that can lead to a behavior, which is like, oh my goodness, I might as well have another brownie because I've already been bad and like black and white thinking. As opposed to with intuitive eating and self-compassion, oh, I had the brownie. That's wonderful. I enjoyed it. It was delicious. And that's wonderful. And
And that's
like,
it.
and you didn't do anything wrong. And now we're going to move on, you know? It's like a different way of just relating to yourself.
Yeah, self-compassion is definitely one of those themes like throughout the whole intuitive eating book. And it's interesting because like I read the book and I started doing the training and then like at the, like around the same time I remember speak my therapist telling me about self-compassion. It's like everything sort of like, you know, comes together and because you realize like dieting's so black and white and so mean and so rigid. Just like the voices of dieting, diet culture. And like, it just never helps. Like, the meaner we are to ourselves, like, the most worse off we are. And we all know it, you know? So, like, I think maybe people don't know it, but like, they don't believe it because they've just had that inner critic for so long. They think it really helps, but like, it really doesn't. So, learning that, you know, that self-compassionate way of life, especially with our eating, it just, you know, it makes all the difference, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually, when I especially was like first, you know, recovering and getting into this intuitive eating, it was two things that were like really important for me. One was like the self-compassion piece, and the other piece was I think I'm imagining a lot of your viewers are Jewish people who have heard these terms before, but I'll explain them in case not. Hishtablus versus bitachon. Which is like hishtablus is like the actual work that we put in, and then bitachon is like having the faith that you know it is what it is, and like you don't have control over it anymore. And I think that piece was really important, especially for the body size piece or weight gain or losing weight, whatever it was that the hishtablus is I'm going to do everything I can to take care of myself and my overall health and well-being, and that means incorporating intuitive eating into my life and all the other things that are important in my health, which are unrelated to food and exercise, you know, social connections and my spiritual health and my positive self-talk and all sleep hygiene, all those things. And the results, the way my body looks, that is out of my control. And that's like the bitachon piece. And I feel like that was like really, really helpful for me. And it still is sometimes when those thoughts come in my head. I just have to pause. And I try to do that with other areas of my life too, but just like hishtablus versus bitachon. What is in my control? What is out of my control? And it brings me a lot of peace when I
I love
recommend.
that. I really love that. I also feel like that's been a journey for me in terms of like even with a business, you know, hishtadlus versus bitachon, and all these things overlap, of course, but you could only do what you could do, and like it gives you that sense of like comfort and relief that you do your part, you know. And you know, weight is not a behavior, so like if you want to engage in healthy behaviors, go for it, but weight's not one of them. And exactly the thing, you could eat in a certain way and move in a certain way, and the outcome is the outcome. And I feel like that's such an important point for people to hear. Okay, Adina, I have to go to my next meeting, but if you want to
Okay.
share what's if people want to get in
This
touch with
has been
you,
so enjoyable. I can't believe it's been an hour already.
yes, it was so fun. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you for so much
Of
for giving me this
course,
opportunity. I
of
really appreciate
course.
it.
My pleasure. I love hearing intuitive eating stories and journeys. So you're taking new cl I'm asking, are you taking new clients?
So yeah, I'm like just starting to like set my business up officially. I'm working with someone to help get the LLC and everything like
Wow.
that. So I'm just starting. I do have a little, if I may share my little
Go for
Instagram
it.
account.
Yes.
It's called Intuitive Eating Journeys. And if anyone does want to, get in touch with me, the best way is probably just to DM me on that. Thank
Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming on. Have a great day.
you so much. You too.
Okay, bye. I just want to say one more thing before we close that I spoke to Jenna Zelka this week. She gave birth to a beautiful baby boy. So reach out to her and say mazel tov, and maybe we only share in good things and simchas, and maybe we only hear. Have a great day. Thank you all so much for being here on my podcast, Get Into It with Gila. If you'd like to learn more about what I do and what intuitive eating is, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com or follow me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. Thank you so much. Have a great day.